Okay, hello everybody, thank you for being here. My name is Juan Ignacio Ratalino Edreira. I am a research assistant professor at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. And today I'm going to present this project, which is entitled Assessing the Causes of Yield Gap in Agriculture Areas with Diversity in Climate and Soil. And by the way, this project is already published in Agriculture and Forest Meteorology. So to begin with this presentation, this will be focused on soybean, and just as an introduction, let me say that United States soil area is about 34 million of hectares, which represent about the 30% of the soybean yield production. And most of this production is performing in the north central US region, which account for 80% of the total US area, soybean area. And in this region, you can get some yield potential of 6 tons per hectare. And if you look at the actual yields, they are about 3 tons per hectare. So the yield gap is huge. It's around 3 tons per hectare. So that gives you an idea of how the opportunity is to increase yields in this region. So the main goal of this project is to benchmark current yield and management practices in producer fields across the north central US region, in order to identify key management factors that can help producers to increase yield and input use efficiency. So, and as I mentioned in the main goal, we are using producer data. And this map shows the north central US region. The area that you can see in green is the soybean area for 2015. And the area the dots that you can see in red is the location of the survey data that we collected from 2014 and 15. And as you can see there, there are about 3,500 fields collected for these 2 years, and well, we are continue collecting data, and in 2016 with the 2016 we have more than 6,000 fields. So all this work is just possible because it is a work team between different universities, and the leadership of Patricio Gracino of the University of Nebraska and Sean Colley at the University of Wisconsin, and of course some local collaborators in different states. So this is the way that we collected the data. So what you have there is an example of a survey from a producer in Nebraska. So what you can see in different columns here are for different, each column is a given field for a given year. In this case, it's 2014 for these 2 years and 15 in these 2 years. And we asked producers to provide with field location and field boundaries. So we can draw, you know, the boundary lines in Google Earth, and then to retrieve some additional information that we use for making some contextualization of data in terms of weather and soil. And we ask them with some management practices like irrigation type and amount, drainage type, of course yield, planting date, variety, seeding rate, row spacing, seed treatment, and so on. So the challenge is to put all this information together in an Excel file or in a database, and then, you know, this is we have a lot of management that we collect, and then a lot of farmers. But I would say, once we have this data in a database, we run a quality control. But the challenge is how to make fair comparison amongst fields. I mean, I think this is a tough question, because this example would illustrate is a field which is located in Nebraska. It's a rainfield field in central Nebraska, and this one is one in Iowa, in central Iowa. And as you can see there, the annual rainfall is about 600 millimeters. But here is about 900 millimeters, and the soil types are completely different. So for sure, the yield potential are different there. So if you compare actual use between them or the management practice that they are doing, it's not fair to make just a simple comparison between them. So once we argue that collecting producer data is equivalent to running field experiments only if fields are properly contextualized relative to climate and soil. And this gives us an idea of how efficient we can be if we use producer data to at least to have a first cut of what are the main or the major limiting factors in a given region. So to address this question about how we can properly contextualize the data, we use what we call the technology extrapolation domain. So this is an approach and a special framework that, just to give you a quick idea of how it works, it creates some region with the same climate or fairly same climate and soil condition. They are the most important one that affect yields. And this framework was shown to represent the yield variation in the U.S. for corn. And what you have here is different, with different colors are different technology extrapolation domains. So again, different colors will show different variation, different regions with the same climate and soil conditions. And we pick 10 technology extrapolation domains, the ones that has more than 90 fields. So we want to have a robust analysis of the data, so we select those with the largest number of fields. And as you can see there, with the letter R, it's indicated that we have only rainfed fields here, irrigated fields here, and in this technology extrapolation domain in eastern Nebraska and Kansas, we have both rainfed and irrigated. So this is some of the results. So this is the result of the yield potential for different technology extrapolation domains. So this number, you can look at which is the technology extrapolation domain that we are referring to if you look at this map. So the one R is located here and so on, and for the two different years. So the bar illustrates the yield potential, the simulated yield potential. Then the bars with indicated with colors, yellow for rainfed and blue for irrigated, represent the average actual yield of the survey data. And this white bar indicates the yield gap, which is the difference between the actual yield and the potential. And the percentage here illustrate the relative yield gap, which is the ratio between the actual yield and the yield potential. So as you can see there, the yield potential varies a lot across region, as expected. In North Dakota, where you have a very short season, you have a lower yield potential, but the highest yield potential are located in this region. And of course, the irrigated technology extrapolation domain shows the highest yield potential. And when we look at the yield gap, as you can see and as expected, the yield gap for rainfed fields range between 15 and 28 in the case of rainfed fields, and the average is 22. And in the case of irrigated fields, the gap is range between 11 to 16, and the average was 13. So, but when we look at what are doing the best producer in a given region, we make this comparison, which is this is the yield, the actual yield of the top five producers, so it's in percentile 95, and this is again the simulated yield. And as you can see here, most of these best producers lay on the one-to-one line. That means that they are currently now in all of these region producers that are achieving the yield potential. So what are they doing the other one, or how can the other one, you know, get closer to the yield potential? And the most meaningful factor that explains the yield potential is the planting date. So what you can see here in this chart is the producer yield, and this is the planting date. So each panel represents a different TED, and as you remember, the number 7 has both rainfed and irrigated with different colors. So every dot is a surveyed field, and what you have here is the potential response of yield to planting date. As you can see, the responses were between 33 kilos per hectare per day. That means that every day you are losing 33 kilos. So in 3 days you are losing 100 kilos, which is a lot. And you have some regions like the one in North Dakota that you have a yield loss of only 1 kilo per hectare. And this was kind of surprising because this region is one of the coldest one. So you are expecting to have a more response to planting date. But an answer to that could be, the answer to this question could be answered here in this panel. As you can see, you have this line here represents the potential response to planting date for rainfed crops, and this one is the one for irrigated crops. And as you can see, the slopes are different. So that gives us an idea that even if in this region where you have the same biophysical condition, there may be some limitation of water that explains that. But we went further and we found a relationship between this slope, so this yield penalty here in this axis, and the water balance during the pod setting. So as you can see here, this number represents more deficit and this number represents no water deficit. So as you may remember, this region has a slope almost close to zero, and this is because they have a water deficit during this period. So it doesn't allow the crops to express the response to planting day. So to wrap up, the combined use of producer data and robust spatial framework represent the cost-effective approach to identify causes of yield gap across large geographic regions. And as shown before, the soybean yield gap in the north-central U.S. region was about 22% for the rainfed crops and 13% for irrigated crops. And the sowing date was the most consistent factor explaining yield variation within the same TED and year, with magnitude of yield response to sowing date depending upon the degree of water availability during the pod setting. So having said that, I want to thank you, our sponsor. We were the North Central Soybean Research Program, the Nebraska Soybean Board, and the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board. Thank you, and now I open to questions.
So what model did you use to determine your potential yield, and how is that calibrated?
Well, we use the soy seam model, and this model was calibrated, I mean, actually was developed in the U.S., so the calibration was across the whole U.S., I mean, the most important regions in the U.S. Sir? No problem.
How did you estimate the potential yield for rain conditions?
For rain condition, what we use was a boundary function that was previously published in a paper of Grassini, in which you can have an idea of which is the potential yield that you can have for a given amount of water, and with using soy seam, we have an idea of which was the available water for a crop, for a given rainfed crop, and we use that boundary function to estimate the yield potential. It's a rainfed yield potential, yeah, that's right.
Yes, we can find that.
Thank you. So you were saying that some producers are basically at potential yield.
Yeah, that's right.
It's pretty hard to believe. I'm not saying that what you did. Mm-hmm. Just, is that potential yield or should be maybe
There are some papers showing that a good estimator of yield potential could be a crop simulation model, and it could be very good, well managed field experiments, and it could also be, you know, producers that are getting very high yields in a region where you have access to technology.
Yeah.
So we pretty trust a lot on this estimation. I mean, this is what other publications show on estimation of yield potential. As long as you have like the growing condition that you have in the U.S., where you have a lot of access to technology and producers are investing, yeah, I mean, we can trust in this. There are not too much room. Well, there are things to do in terms of improving the use efficiency of inputs. I mean, they probably may be applying a lot of input that, you know, they don't have any response. But in terms of increasing yield, I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, Mike? I have the same question, and I wonder if yield potential is underestimated a little bit. Are those consistently the same farmers in the 95th percentile? Because that would suggest they can't be making money, essentially, right?
Hey, who knows? I mean, what you are saying is, are those producers getting the highest yield in the 2 years that we collect data, for example?
Yeah, would they?
I mean, normally, yes. The answer is yes. Of course, we need to be fair with the other producers. Sometimes these producers have a combination of things that they can do and some combination of things that they can't do, like, you know, they can't choose the soil because they just own a land that has very bad soil. But I would say that, yes, I mean, they should be consistent. We didn't track if, you know, the yield that was very high for 1 year for a given producer is the same producer. But it's something that eventually we can do here because some producer provide the data. I mean, when we ran this survey, we didn't ask them to provide the information because we know that it's very sensitive. I mean, the name and last name of producer. So sometimes we can't track those producers. But I would say yes. I would say that they are consistently the same ones.
One real quick follow-up. I was surprised that the yield potential wasn't higher in the irrigated systems than in non-irrigated. Were you surprised by that?
No. No, I mean...
Why?
I mean, what it was not surprising to me that it was that the highest yield were in the irrigated fields. I mean, then the rainfed areas can have the same potential. Of course, you don't have any water limitation. What it would be surprising to me is the irrigated areas would have lower yield potential than the rainfed one, if considering again the like a similar, you know, crop cycle length and solar radiation, of course. So the answer is no. Why? This is an insect, you mean? Okay. Well, in the survey, we asked them to provide with this kind of comment if they have a, you know, like a huge limitation on insect diseases or even hail or frost. And we discard all those fields. So, as you saw in the relationship between yields and planting date. I would say that most of the response is because of planting date. It's not in my presentation here, but it's in the paper. So other limitation factors were, the application of fungicide on insecticide. So the one that apply, normally they have highest yield, and it was kind of consistently across regions.
Yeah, but in most of the cases, the application was prophylactic.
Yeah, yeah.
It was not curative, so we know that there is an economically profitable response to foliar fungicide application, but that application is 99% of the cases just prophylactic.
Yeah. Another management factor was tillage. I mean, no till in some tests yield less than till. Yeah.
And with the information that that sowing date was the most important factor, I mean, I guess kind of where do you go with that? And that, I mean, to what extent do producers control? Can they control planting date? I mean, it's often an interaction between kind of their local soil and weather conditions that constrain sure. when they can get in. So I'm just curious, kind of what's the outcome of this from a more extension? Kind of
yeah, sure. I mean. That's true. I mean, we can you know extend or we can say that they need to plant earlier, but if they can, they can. But if you can do that, I would say that do this in the high yield potential fields because you will get highest yield. If you are a producer that has irrigated and raised fields, plant first the irrigated one because it are the one with the highest yield. So a producer can choose or like can plan what field to plant earlier if they can. And I would say again that they should choose the one that with highest yield potential. Then it's gonna depend on the year, of course. Yeah.
You know, in that situation, if you've got irrigation in the higher producing yields, will they be tempted not to do the normal rotation
mm-hmm.
if the price of that commodity is such that
mm-hmm.
they're gonna skip the rotation?
Sure.
Is that happening?
We're not sure with this because we have no information about crop rotation in this survey. It's just only 1 year, and again, we didn't track if a producer is providing the same field information. Actually, if they rotate corn, soybean, the same field is going to not be surveyed here because we are only asking for soybean data. But yeah, that's very interesting.
Can I have a quick question? When the irrigation the yield is increased about 1 ton per hectare,
mm-hmm.
how about the cost for the facility and the labor for the irrigation system? They can make the kind of balance get a profit?
The balance between
irrigation and no irrigation over the yield increase.
I mean, I don't have the answer for that, but I believe that it's very profitable because in Nebraska they are actually doing a lot of irrigation. I mean, the irrigated area in Nebraska is 50% of the total soybean area. But I don't have an answer to your question, sorry.
Yeah, we can continue this discussion because if you notice, we've got a gap here. So the next talk is not until 11:20.
So I should take a seat, right?
Yeah.
So coming from your question, like talking about extension, so I look at it from a system viewpoint. So like, I'm in your R2 zone in the southern Illinois. And we don't have, it's more of a flat line, we don't have as much of a decrease over time. And so that tells me that in our neck of the woods, we probably need to be more double cropping, right? If we can squeeze something else in and we're not gonna lose a lot of yield from planting in mid-late.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay. So you're referring to this one here, right? To this region here?
Yeah, I'm in the 2R.
Okay,
yeah.
To be here or the 2R, okay. Yes and no. I mean, again, you have 15 kilograms per day, so in 5 days or 6 days you can lose 100 kilograms, which is a lot. So if you delay your planting day because of the cover crop or whatever, you will be losing money. But remember something as well. I mean, this is a 2 years survey, and the response, the yield penalty, you're locating here, and this is because there was this water limitation. So if you have a given year where you have enough water, the yield loss will be higher. So you can't say that you will always have 15 kilograms per day in your region. I mean, it could be more, it could be less. So, and 15 kilograms to me is kind of
But also, you didn't consider the fact that if you're doing like a later double crop after either a cover or a wheat crop,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have that extra residue, which will probably help your water holding capacity.
Maybe. Yeah.
That's going to be a definite factor.
Yeah, maybe. Sure.
Because oxygen, so in my neck of the woods, we actually just harvested on my own farm last week double crop beans that were the exact same as my first crop beans.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I mean,
Yeah. That may be possible, sure.
So, in your analysis, you threw out the data, if I got you right, with the where you had insect or disease problems, right?
Sorry, say again?
You said you had data sets where you, the farmer noted they had insect or disease problems. How did you manage those?
I mean, they sometimes they reported that they have some issues. And what we did is just we discarded them because we wanted to...
So that's not a factor in your analysis?
No. No, we discarded them. But, you know, sometimes some producer may not know, and they will include this information. But, I mean, we did what we could do to have a clean analysis here. Yeah. No, sure. Sure.
So basically, the biological component in that case, pests and diseases are not considered.
Yeah, it's not part of the analysis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that may be a factor in a production situation, that may be a factor affecting your potential yield, but it's just not part of this analysis.
Yeah. You suppose that, for example, this is the yield potential here for this region, and you have another yield here, which means that something is wrong, but it's not because of the insect or diseases, because we remove them. So it may be other management factors that could be others, like tillage, for example.
Yeah, I want to make a comment here. That, just imagine how many years of a traditional field experiments you will need to get to something close to this. And I'm not saying that this is perfect, because by the end of the day, it's very hard to establish a good effect. But with 2 years of very well contextualized farmer field data, we were able to come up with kind of solid relationships between producer yields and planting dates, identify other limiting factors such as tillage or fungicide application and so forth. This has the potential to make our field research so way more efficient in the sense that it can give us a list of 10 candidate factors that should be worth to explore more in way more traditional field experiments. So this to me really has the potential to change the way we're doing research, in which we run our field experiments year after year in our backyard, thinking that that's the best thing in the world, instead of trying to understand a bit better what are the problems that farmers are facing on their fields and focusing on
that. So on top of that, when you run a field experiment, you have limited resources, and you need to pick some places. And in this situation, you are having, you know, the whole range of management practice that producers are doing. So we are pretty convinced that, you know, with this, you are getting like all the responses that you can get in a given region. And again, then you will focus, if you are interested on some detailed things, on some field experiment that you will target. But this is, I think, it's very nice and very cost-effective to have a first idea.
Related to that, this afternoon there's a symposium on long-term ag research, and there'll be this discussion. They're just getting an idea of what they're going to do as far as what the experimentation in relation to cropping
mm-hmm.
systems
mm-hmm.
in a larger context
sure.
such as this. So I encourage you to go to that symposium.
Yeah. No, and producer data will become more and more available. We all know that. But the thing is, again, how to make fair comparison. And we need this kind of special framework to do that. Otherwise, you will compare with apples. So, yeah.
Still got about 7 minutes for...
shoot.
Keep going.
We'll drink more water.
So you, I assume that for producer yields, did you, how were those collected? Were those extracted from yield maps or?
No, this kind of survey. So it gives you no data of which is the yield within a field, but is the average yield of.
Was it yield monitor data?
Well, some producer may have this information and they will provide us with the average yield of the field.
So they could
use
whatever way they collected.
Yeah.
The yield.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So could they lie?
Well, we have. I mean, I didn't put this in this presentation, but we have a comparison between this collected data with the USDA NAS, and it's pretty good. And the good thing is that if they lie similarly across the region because there was a trend that. But going back to this question, I mean, a way to answer this question if they could lie is to ask for the yield range across different fields that they may have. So if they provide this 80 and the lowest yield, which is 61 for one field and 90 for the other one, we will know at least if they are providing us with the best field that they have or the worst one. And normally they provide the best one, of course, they are very proud.
Yeah, yeah. And something else, one is in the past we did some back check and we sent the same survey to the same farmer but 3 or 4 months later. Under the assumption that if you lie, you won't remember how you lied.
Yeah, that's good.
And we found that the rate of layers was extremely low. So Alaska farmers don't lie.
No, they're
right. Yeah. You mentioned, I believe, at one point, the soil water content during PACO was critical. In proportion to planting, how critical?
It's not the soil water content, it's the amount of, is the difference between potential evapotranspiration and precipitation. And again, is this chart here, and it shows that depends on which region are you considering. So it could be a lot of.
How did you determine the water balance?
So what we did first is we ran some simulation to have an idea of which was the crop phenology. So we could determine R2 and R5, and then we just, for this particular period, we just make a difference between potential evapotranspiration and precipitations.
So you didn't depend on the farmer's recollection of how much it had rained?
No. We use measure weather data, which are very good quality. Mm-hmm. We asked for fertilizers, but you know, results are not that consistent because some producer may like plant the fertilization on corn and not on soybean. So you never know if they are applying with the strategy they are following. For example, in the application of phosphorus, they may want to apply everything for corn and then have some residue for soybean. But we don't know that, so like results are very tricky in that way. So I think that we need to ask when we ask for fertilization, we should like consider the entire crop rotation. Otherwise, sometimes we don't know what is the strategy. Mike?
Just wanted to get yesterday at the tree CEO, I was making fun of me because we can't get anybody to grow cover crops in Iowa. But I think that slide, you know, back to your point, the gentleman in front of me, slide of the planting dates would be really useful to soybean growers who want to put a cover crop in and want to maximize potential mulching, weed suppression.
Sure.
Effects to it.
Sure. Sure.
Share those with
sure.
Those people.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. But again, keep in mind that this is an average response and you need to consider the temporal variation in weather, of course.
Okay. We're close to time now. So.
Okay, I'm free. Thank you.